The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Minutes past 12. Faster Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Max Radio. Your chance to have your say about whatever's on your mind, because we're open line today through until 1 o'clock. Call 66 13 68, text or WhatsApp 166 177, email studio maxradio.com. Here we are, the radar capital of the world, home of the halfway horse tram. David's first with us today. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. And I'm sorry for coming on again, but there was a good meeting yesterday. We made history yesterday between the local authorities and one government department, that's the DOI. And they had to put us into the Timbal Chamber because there was that many local authority members there, clerks and political members there, and a couple of politicians came up from there. The House of Keys at the back of the Timbald itself. And I just want to thank all those people that did come. I've never met so many people in all my life that, A, I didn't know, and people I did know, and people I haven't seen for ages. Do you know what I mean? We live on a small island, but sometimes we don't bump into people that we know, say, over the radio, and we never meet them 6 months, through the year. But I just want to thank everybody for actually attending and putting that history down there. And thank the MLCs for listening to us, whether they grasped all of it. But my major thing, as far as I'm concerned, is one of those members that's been in for a while and around the block and representing, as far as I'm concerned, one of the members for Onchan there, is that the minister could, or Hooper could, actually withdrawal clause 5, and that's what we're all asking for. It was unanimous around the local authorities there, and it'll be a bestseller if somebody, when they print that out, and because it was done verbatim, is you'll be able to hear the comments from the local authorities. And the one major thing that came out for us sitting in the public gallery is clause 5 shouldn't exist. It's a draconian clause and shouldn't be there. And the member, and I'm not having to go mostly at Mr. Hooper on that, but at the end of the day, he could actually, it wasn't backed up anyway, what he was trying to do. And my opinion, it looks as though it was for an issue to do with the civic amenity site up the north, which may have upset the minister or the department. They could have fixed it in other ways, but it didn't happen. So I hope I'll get off now and let all those other people that were there maybe come on. You've already had some of the news items come on to say that this shouldn't happen. It's never happened in all our lives. And I've got what to thank, really, all those clerks that were there and the chairmen, especially to Tony Brown. It won't be embarrassing to him, but he hit the nut right on the head. This shouldn't have happened. It should have been. We should have been protected as local authority people. One of the issues that was thrown out were they were going to prosecute local authority members. You know, Andy, what's that about? We're not in a police state yet, are we?
No, not last time I looked. What was the mood of the local authority contingent there, David? Were they optimistic?
Well, I think we were really optimistic, to tell you the truth. We're all talking to one another before we sat in. We filled the downstairs, and I don't know where you've ever been. You probably have been in there to have a look. But anyway, it's not a big place. And could I say, one thing that's never been addressed, and is for disabled people. When you go upstairs, it's like sitting in a picture house, and the seats are so narrow and uncomfortable, and it's so, you know, you could. I remember years ago there was a fella that tripped on the stairs going down towards where you could look over the top, and for because they put a rail in after that in my time there to make sure that no anybody tripped, didn't fly it over the top and land in one of the members' seats at the bottom. Anyway, I'll back off, and I've had my say for a while there, but there's still hope that the national politicians, that's the House of Keys members, and we've still got the Municipal Association, a meeting on Thursday night in Onchan. So we'll have a big debrief, I'm sure, of that, and hopefully we'll get some way we're going to go forward to make... This is not going to drop. I can tell you this for a fact. It's okay. Going to be... a political issue for the new House of Keys.
All right.
All right, mate.
Good to hear from you. Thanks, David.
See you, boy.
Cheers now. It's 12 minutes past 12 now, and Julie's on with us now. Hi, Julie. We'll try and find Julie. In that case, we'll find Julian. Hi, Julian.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well, yes. You're in for Julie, by the way, Julian.
Well, I'll just make my voice a bit lower in that case. Yeah, just agree with what David was just saying there. You know, they've cut back on the DOI road crews. You've got a lot of roads that south, north, all over the place full of potholes. I think perhaps the £400,000 on 20 mile an hour signs was probably the last straw, I think, in terms of, you know, get on with it. You know, fix the roads, cut back those ash dieback trees, and get on with it, instead of what it looks like is foisting the cost onto rates instead of just doing what you're supposed to be doing. I think the DOI minister needs to, I don't know, it's not a good look at the moment, is it really, Dandy?
Well, I mean, the thing is that the local government on the Isle of Man has always been a kind of hot potato, in that, you know, there's always been this thought in the past that there should be four big authorities, north, south, east and west. And it's often when people have been commissioners and they get into central government that they want to, if you like, they want to do something about it. The Isle of Man has always liked the fact and cherished the fact that we've got lots of different local authorities. They've all got their own quirks. They've, pardon the pun, but they've all got their own ways of working. But often in central government, how can I put this gently? People in central government often think there's a bit of faffing that goes on in local government, and they want to sort it out. And perhaps this is the bottom. I mean, as David was saying, it may be because of the issue with the Balladool site in Ramsey that that's why Mr. Hooper wants to introduce this clause.
Well, you know, there's all kinds of issues, you know, the tip charges, you know, we're already paying for the blooming tip in the first place, and you're getting all these fly tipping going on. I mean, you know, they've cut back on DOI road crews massively, even in the last 10 years, and it's patently the roads are suffering for it, and the hedges, the weeds, the whole, you know, you look along the roads now, I mean, never used to be, I mean, used to take a pride in how the roads used to look. Speaking of infrastructure, by the way, Telegraph, latest headline this morning, the headline, wind power not as reliable as we thought, admits Miliband. And UK government officials have revised down the models predicting onshore wind farms would produce 43% of their possible annual energy. They've just slashed that figure down to 33%. Well, my immediate question, Andy, is, how on earth can the proposed £40-plus million Erie Stane wind farm produce double the UK average, including Scotland, Wales, Ireland and England, at 65%? If they've just slashed their predictions to 33%, how can Erie Stane be able to produce double that?
And who said that Erie Stane would produce double that? Whose report was that?
This is the MUA. They're saying that from a 26.4 megawatts of installed, which is like four turbines with 6.6 megawatts each, it will produce 149 large units, gigawatt hours. Well, if you work the figures, that's 64.5, almost 65%. The reality will be, if we follow the UK, that the financial sales point for the Isle of Man wind farm will drop from 149 units a year to 76. Well, I'm sorry, but that's kind of like, you're not really being honest with the public about how much energy it's going to be. And, you know, if the reason for doing this wind farm is to achieve net zero, the newly published ETHER report commissioned by the Isle of Man government is now indicating that between 1990 and 2023, and this is the one that goes counter to the current report, which convinced Timwell to sign up to the Climate Change Act. And despite increasing the Isle of Man population from 1990 to 2023 by 15,000 or 20%, the new report says that we dropped total emissions by 21,500 tons. And this also includes producing large amounts of extra electricity beyond our needs for export to the UK, and that's using our old diesel engines and turning up the Pullrose gas generators. And then on top of this, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's core writer, Professor Miles Allen, who did a Zoom call here to the Manx Farmers Union, he's created a new calculation for methane emissions, which if they actually implemented it, would drop the misreported Manx agricultural emissions accrued since 1991 by 72%. So if the electrical export and the reduced agricultural emissions were properly accounted for, you'd not only end up with the per capita emissions of the Isle of Man would be massively reduced, but it would probably indicate that we've been at net zero for some time, Andy. I mean, you know, it's not our choice to export electricity using diesel engines and ramping up the gas generators. You can hardly blame us for that.
Well, and that's the point. We don't quite know how close we are to net zero, do we? I mean, has there ever been a calculation as to, you know, we know how much we emit, but I mean, there's an awful lot of greenery on the Isle of Man. It'd be nice to know how close we are to net zero. And in fact, if in fact there is a reliable mechanism, a reliable equation to actually find out how we get there, Julian.
Yeah, I mean, even if we need to get there. I mean, you know, you look in any large agricultural greenhouse, they've got huge carbon dioxide cylinders getting the CO2 up to three times what we're breathing in, because it increases, massively increases the yields from vegetables and all that stuff. But, you know, it looks to me like the actual report that we've paid for as taxpayers is saying that it's a massive improvement in our emissions since 1990.
Okay.
And I think, thanks, Andy.
We appreciate it. Thank you, Julian. I found Julie now. Julie's back with us now. Hello, Julie.
Hello. Yes, the phone just went dead.
Oh, good grief.
We're back now. We're back.
So what's on your mind?
I just wanted to clear up a couple of things about the sheltered housing that was talked about yesterday on the old Princess Motor site.
Oh, in Laxey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have been involved in this for probably getting on for 10 years now, where we have been actively looking for some way, you know, to expand sheltered housing. And obviously in Laxey there are limited spaces. There have been numerous adverts have gone in the paper over the years, you know, calling for sites. And, you know, it's a little bit, I think it's a little bit disingenuous, you know, when you hear that suddenly everybody's complaining about it. And yet on the flip side, everybody is wanting more public sector housing. So you can't have it both ways. You know, you either want us to pursue, you know, to get some more properties out there for people. There is, with our, you know, sort of demographics, there is an aging population. So sheltered is something, you know, that is, it needs to be looked into.
Yeah.
But I wanted to assure that person who was talking about, you know, sort of what is going on the site and the costs of,
well, the concern,
you know, sort of
building was,
on that.
Yeah, the concern was to be left in the hole financially, obviously with places like Braddon, where the roundhouse at Braddon went way over budget, the flats at Braddon went over budget. People are just concerned that the ratepayer will be left holding the bill, Julie.
Absolutely. Well, there's two different parts of that. So what has been decided to go forward with, and nothing has been signed, nothing is, you know, sort of set in stone at this particular time, but part of the complex would be used for the Commissioner's office, new offices, because the commission's building that they're currently in now, we have had priced it. It's basically, it needs raising to the ground. You know, there is no other option. But to have that raised to the ground and then rebuilt would be nearly twice the cost of actually adding the offices into the sheltered housing complex if permission is given to, you know, for it to go ahead. The cost of the sheltered housing part of it would be covered by the rental income and then possibly offset, you know, by a deficiency payment from the government. The commissioner's part of it would pretty much be covered by selling the old building that they already have as a development site.
Yeah.
It's not unfortunately big enough to put on another sheltered housing complex up there.
Right.
But you know, this has been something that has been looked into. There is absolutely no cost to the commissioners, you know, at this moment in time. The investigations that are going on the site, you know, people may have seen diggers and pylons and things all going into the ground. That is 100% being covered by Dandara, because unless the site itself can be cleared and would be a free build that can be built on there, because obviously there's been concerns, you know, raised about what's in the ground, what's under the ground, yeah. Is there anything on, you know, underneath? Those have all been, you know, sort of looked at, and I just find it a little bit, you know, when people come on and go, oh, have you done this? Give us a call. Because yes, we have. I have been working on this personally for at least 10 years, you know, where it's gone backwards and forwards to government. It's gone out to, you know, QSs. It's gone to experts who are not me. Business plans have been, you know, brought together.
Yeah.
The funding that would go over however many years to build it has all been, you know, sort of calculated and recalculated several times, because obviously the, you know, costs change, but as well as costs change, changing, rents also change, you know, and yeah, I'd just like to say that, you know, just as a final note, you know, the local authorities and, you know, the government departments do work together. They are certainly within housing anyway, you know, they are working together, you know, and people are, you know, putting in long hours, you know, behind the scenes to make these things happen.
Right. So what's the situation with Coolroy? What will happen there?
Coolroy will stay as it is. Coolroy will, there is nothing wrong. Part of the building here, if you look at sort of new regulations on sheltered housing and the projects that they're looking at for keeping people at home longer, not because this is an old building, because, I mean, it, you know, it isn't. You know, part of it was only built in the 80s, but it doesn't necessarily meet regulation. You know, so, for example, one end doesn't have a lift going up into it, so the stairs. Sheltered housing, you're supposed to be able-bodied, but if you're wanting to keep people here longer and then add additional care, you know, into their packages, that would no longer, you know, sort of fit the criteria that is going to be coming in. However, because part of it is a separate block to the rest of it, there is no reason why that couldn't be used for people who are fit and healthy over the age of 55, which again would create more single-person
right.
accommodation.
But structurally, Coolroy is fine structurally, isn't it?
It is, yep. The latest report that was done on Coolroy was done about 5 weeks ago.
Okay, right.
So
here's the $64,000 question then, Julie. If everything, if you got the green light tomorrow, how long would it take for this? It's 34 units, isn't it? This sheltered housing development. How long would it take for it to be built and ready to be opened?
I'm assured that from the first shovel going in the ground, which will be me doing that, because I've fought long and hard on this, 18 months.
Okay. All right. Good to hear from you, Julie. Thanks for calling today.
Enjoy your day. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye. 26 minutes past 12 on Man in Line. And Wilf's on now. Hello, Wilf.
Hi. I'm trying to get a bit of information. A fellow asked me the other day, he said, tell me about smart meters. And I said, I know nothing at all about smart meters. I don't like electric. I said, all I know is that If you stick your finger in the wrong place, it bites you. I said, I don't want to know anything about electric. I'll leave that to the electrician. So he said, well, what are they for? And I said, well, I don't know. Andy will know, or somebody on the man online will know what they actually do. What are they for? And he said, have you got to have it? Is it compulsory that you have these things? Or can you say, no, I don't want it?
You can.
Now I said,
you can say no, Wilf, but you will have to pay for them to come and read your meter. A smart meter is basically a clever little thing. It's like an ordinary meter, but it's linked
right
to the internet. So the MUA, the MEA, will be able to know how much electricity you're using and when you're using it. So it's basically an automatic reading machine.
Oh, that's all it is, yeah. Well, and other than that, when somebody comes to read your meter, I mean, people come to read my meter, but I'm never in or whatever, and they shove a little yellow card through the door, and I just read it myself, and then write on that, and then get on the phone to them and tell them what it is, and they send me the correct bill. But I don't think I've been charged any extra for that. So, I mean, if that could be done, I don't know.
Well, in the future, you won't even get a yellow card. They'll be able to read it from outside the door.
Well, that's if I have one of these things. I'm not bothered whether I have one or not. It doesn't bother me.
Okay.
They can stick what they like on the wall. I don't care.
Right. Thanks.
But you can refuse if you don't want one.
But you have to pay then for them to read your meter. So basically, if you don't have one, it's going to cost you money.
I see. As long as it wasn't too much, it wouldn't matter, would it? I don't know. Somebody could be frightened of these smart meter things. I don't know.
Yeah.
They say they can read all kinds of things through these things. I don't know. Technology. I'm way behind with that. I'm a dinosaur.
Okay.
Right.
Thanks, Wilf. Good to hear from you.
Okay.
Thanks for that. 28 minutes past 12. I had a note through my door the other day, or a letter, saying you're going to get a smart meter. Have you got a smart meter? It's basically an electronic device that reads utility information. It could be gas, could be electricity. Sometimes I think they do them for water as well. And it communicates your bill, basically, to the suppliers. And automatic meter reading. So there we are. Like to mention that the smart meter also allows the electricity company to switch off your electricity without entering your house. So in the case of electricity shortages, they can decide who gets what, says Susan in a windy Dolby. It's worth asking the question. Thank you, Susan. Oh, also, Susan sent one in yesterday. Thank you, Susan. I've just got it now. What about one of those new mini Rolls-Royce nuclear reactors? Only needs 10 acres, apparently, and the reactor only covers 1.5 acres. Available in 2029. They come in chunks on a lorry, according to the BBC, where you can read an article all about it. Problem solved. It says, the whole point about the wind turbines is that they are spread out. Wind turbines do cover a lot more. I mean, they require no fuel, obviously. You don't have to put anything in to a wind turbine, apart from lubrication. Wind farms have obviously less impact on the environment than many other forms of power generation, and they're often referred to as a good source of green energy. Obviously, they've been criticised for visual impact. You can't get away from the darn things, especially the ones that they're looking to put up off the east coast of the Isle of Man, 1,000 feet high, enormous things. Wind farms have been criticised for visual impact, the impact on the landscape, and typically, of course, they need to be spread out over more land than other power stations and will need to be built in wild and rural areas. So the countryside does get industrialised. However, you're not burning fossil fuels. And as there seems to be the current political thinking is, the ideology is that fossil fuels are bad and that we need to transition to get away from using fossil fuels. What we end up with using, who knows, could be hydrogen, could be anything, could be thorium. Everybody keeps telling me about thorium, how wonderful thorium is. And the reactors, there's a company in Denmark that is going hell for leather on thorium. Smart meters will ultimately permit the MUA to introduce reduce peak and off-peak tariffs based on the time of use, says Gaz. And you know that for a fact, do you, Gaz? You're not making that up, are you? Is it true? It will be automatic, though. The smart meters will be able to be read by the utility operators. Let's hope that Laxey and Lonan commissioners get the new build on the Princess Motors site up and running. They might also be able to get Village Eyesores cleaned up as well. That old junk shop opposite their offices. The disgusting toilets on the harbour side, says... the litter in the public shelter as well. And thanks also to... I got a note also in from Martin Royal at Garth District Commissioners, just telling us about the 34-unit sheltered housing development. Well, apparently the 34 units make up 93% of the project. The Commissioner's Office will be the remaining 7%. Of this. So just to reiterate, the sheltered housing component will be funded through a government-arranged low-interest loan serviced by rental income from the unit and the usual government deficiency contribution, meaning no financial impact on the Garth ratepayer at all. The office component will be funded mainly through the sale of the current offices, with any shortfall covered by a government-arranged low-interest loan, consequently minimal impact on the rate. Now, the commissioners say that the project is still at an early stage. I will go through the petition and government scrutiny process before any approval is given. But one thing is absolutely certain, that sheltered accommodation is needed and care for the elderly is only going to get more pressing. It's often said that the Isle of Man will need a care home, a brand new care home, more capacity every year. Every year, if we are to cope with care for the elderly. Got any thoughts on it? Or anything else for that matter? Text, email, call, WhatsApp.
There's something strange happening down at Silverdale Glen, Ballasalla. The Silverdale Cafe Halloween Hunt. Join the hunt today and answer 6 spooky questions to 6 spooky clues for the chance to be one of 9 daily winners of a Silverdale Spooktacular goodie bag, brimming with spookalicious sweets and treats and a mystery prize to be used at Silverdale Cafe Ballasalla. The Silverdale Cafe Halloween Hunt. Don't miss it.
Playing with crypto will make you rich, right? Look, a celebrity is posting about it on social media, so it's got to be safe. And now, oh, you're only a click away from a fortune. Go on. You've just been scammed. Online scams are everywhere. Fake crypto posts, wild claims, pressure to act fast. It's not a game. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. Always verify the people trying to take your money. A message brought to you by Isle of Man Bankers Association, Financial Crime Partnership, the Isle of Man Constabulary, and the Cybersecurity Centre for the Isle of Man. For further information, visit csc.gov.im.
On Friday, the 31st of October, celebrate Hoptune on the spooky pie and mash train. A meaty, gruesome pie and mash is the perfect treat for Hoptune. So come along and dine at your peril on our ghostly steam train. Tickets just £36 per person, with 6 p.m. departure from Douglas. Book your spooky pie and mash now at rail.im.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
1:25, and Mike's with us now. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Andy.
Hi, Mike. Oh, you're there.
I'm here, yeah. Okay. Press the wrong button.
Okay.
Just some information, what Julian was talking about earlier. A couple of weeks ago, there was a planned maintenance outage at the power station, which was stopped halfway through so they could fire the generators back up again.
Yeah.
Because it's been so dull and still, the UK, was very short of electric, and we were exporting, and they earned good money for that. So we really do need the fossil fuel stations. Gas is already, even the Green Party admit it's a not as bad as it used to be.
They call it a transition fuel.
They do, yes. But the other thing I also noticed, that on the news this morning, it was saying, I can't remember exactly what it was about, but it was saying that the wind turbines are drying out the land locally underneath them. And as you've said, they're spread out on a large area. We're a very small island. I've spoke to you before on the programme that there are investigations going on, because they do know that it does affect local weather in the areas, but they just don't know how much at the moment. So whether that's one for Kiri, because we really can't afford to destroy the weather patterns we've got on such a small island.
And of course we won't know until it happens.
No, and when after we've spent a huge amount of money building all the extra roads to bring it in, all the concrete that's going down, which is very bad for the environment, except they keep telling us. And I think the Treasury Minister said yesterday we're spending, is it $3.5 million just to get this far?
Yes.
With reports, etc.
Yeah.
Well, that's £3.5 million wasted, isn't it? And that's criminal.
Well, I take it then, do you think that the onshore wind farm is a good idea or a bad idea?
It's a disaster. Absolute disaster. We've got one of the biggest colonies of, I forget which, bird of prey in the UK there, down that area. And there are reports that they actually are some more susceptible being killed by the windmills, because when they're hunting, they're looking at the ground. When they're hovering around on the, what do they call it, where the air streams, where it's hot and cold, and they just hover around, gliding, if you like. They're looking for food down. They're not necessarily looking where they're going. And it's known that these birds of prey are one of the major types of bird that get killed by the wind turbines.
Next year,
and we're a sanctuary for them.
Next year, Mike, when potential MHKs come knocking on your door, what will you ask them?
Me?
Yeah.
I want to know if they're for this green agenda's rubbish, because that's what, in my opinion, what it is. And I also want to know about how they stand on vehicles, etc. I am a petrol head. I drive for pleasure, not just to go to work and ride. But I'm not expecting anybody to knock on my door. I've never had anybody knock on my door at any of the elections.
And did you vote?
Yes, I still vote. I just had to take a guess. Because if you don't vote, you can't complain, can you? It should be compulsory that you have to vote of some way, because that is the democratic society. All right, that's probably not wrong making it compulsory, because then that's against democratic society. But what I'm trying to say is that you need to, your vote does count. And all the people who say, oh, well, it won't make any difference, it will, because they're not affecting the outcome.
Yeah, and if everybody thought that, then nothing would get done.
Correct. I've never really been that interested in politics, although I've always voted. Now is a time in my life when I am quite concerned about politics, but people have said, well, why don't you stand? I got minor health problems. I couldn't do it. The workload would be too much. But I don't know. I am dead against the wind farms.
Okay.
I think it's a lot of money that we need for everything else and it's going to cause problems, and it could quite easily bankrupt us in the long term.
All right, Mike, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Thank you.
19 minutes before one. Management of trees is down to landowners, not the DOI or local authorities. This says 887. Well, the DOI does have some trees, doesn't it? So, and they've already talked about the responsibility of landowners. In fact, I got an interesting note from Ronnie, who said, when people let their hedges or shrubs protrude onto the pavement, how much are they allowed to do that? Because near where Ronnie lives, somebody's let a hedge grow about 2 feet into the pavement. It's quite a wide pavement, he says, but the hedge is about 2 feet, and really needs, shouldn't the hedges be cut back to the kind of line of the wall underneath it? And whose responsibility is that? Is that the owner of the property or the landlord's responsibility to cut a hedge back that's protruding into the pavement? I'm sick and tired of the government's mantra that they do it in the UK. We are not the UK, and if they want to copy the UK, we might as well get rid of the government and get one MP, says Jam. Parking fines at the Gaiety last night, terrible. A solution would perhaps be that the corporation or the government can agree from the 1st of October to April in our winter months, the opposite of the Gaiety can be used for parking. Open this area up, making it clear once a year for Remembrance Day, it can't be used during that day. That's 382. Who's getting parking fines for the Gaiety Theatre? I'm unsure, says Martha, if this subject was covered since Sunday, but regarding the Sunday return sailing from Liverpool, the Mananan rough sailing, everybody's talking about that. It's come to my attention that the steam packet have it in their small print at the bottom that car owners' vehicles, not the responsibility of the company. Owners have to claim for all damage from their insurance companies. Is this true? Says Martha. Thank you, Desmond. Emissions, just a mathematical juggling of fictional figures. Says expert Desmond. Paul Rose at this moment has been all summer preparing the grounds to build a new massive oil tank to power the diesel generator, probably carry on selling electricity to England. So this government's goal of being green, I think, is rubbish, says this correspondent. And a note in from 462 says, can we ask the DOI minister why plastic cat's eyes are being installed on potholed roads? Wouldn't it be better to use the tar that sticks them to actually fill the holes? Also, the landslide at the Ballymoder hedge following the verge digger work, making the hedge too heavy, and resurfacing on the slock isn't holding gravel chipping. Cars and cat's eyes are falling away, says this correspondent. Kai says, when does the Ben McCree go? Well, according to the news, the Ben McCree, I think, starts on the Fishguard Rosslare run for Stena, I think. The Ben McCree is going from Fishguard in Wales to Rosslare from the 3rd to the 20th of November. That's next Monday, the 3rd of November, while the Stena Nordica covers the Dublin Holyhead route for Stena. The Stena Estrid Fishguard is being closed for planned maintenance. The Ben's going to then run briefly before the Stena Nordica comes back on the 7th of December. So the Ben should be away from next Monday. Let's just hope we don't need her. How about that? Yes. There's another one in, I think. This is from Charlie regarding the how far onto the pavement is a resident's hedge allowed to be? Is it 3 foot? Is it 6 foot? Is it a foot? What is it? And if somebody's hedge is protruding onto the pavement, who do you tell? Well, I'm guessing your local authority will be the people. So if we're not drilling for oil, how do you get the lubricants for the wind turbines, says this correspondent? Well, there's a point. Now, all of a sudden, that we have the need for hundreds of sheltered housing accommodation. We never had the problem in the past because older population members used to pass away at home, looked after by their family members. If unfortunately an older person has to go into hospital and placed back home, a nurse or doctor would call round to see them until their passing. then those passed would leave their houses to their family member to move on to. I personally think the government is putting the older population into care homes simply to free up more council houses for people who've been waiting for years on their list. That's 004's opinion of it. Ian said, well said, Mike. He's echoing the thoughts of a lot of the voting public. It's difficult to see any clarity in the Green agenda, and there's a massive propaganda campaign to support it, which begs more questions than it answers, in my opinion. And it is an opinion programme, and that's Ian's opinion. Parking fines. The drivers should park and walk, says George. Where have they been parking? Opposite the Gaiety, is that it? So what happens when somebody doesn't want to vote for any of the candidates? Do they not vote, or is there another solution? Says this correspondent. That's 039. Well, perhaps they could stand themselves. That's always an answer, isn't it? You could stand yourselves. They can build wind turbines to avoid major migratory routes regarding birds of prey. So that's George who says this. There's much debate about this, and there will be more, of course, as we get into next year's election. There'll be a lot of debate about exactly where the money's going to come from and what the money is going to be spent on. And, of course, we'll be covering absolutely every moment of it on Manx Radio.
I'm so excited. Mum says we can go to Ramsey Garden Centre to get our Christmas decorations. They've got everything for Christmas in store now, from lights and trees to decorations and lovely gifts. Our Christmas always starts with a visit to Ramsey Garden Centre. It's open every day.
Flu season is here, but never fear. So is the chance to protect yourself. Whether you qualify for a free NHS flu jab or would like a private vaccination for just £20, Kingsley Mooty has made it quick and easy to get protected. Visit Kingsley Mooty on Facebook or call 625 040. Get your flu jab today with Kingsley Mooty.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
There is a charity on Ireland where you can talk in confidence about your or someone you care about's relationship with alcohol, drugs, gambling or gaming. Motivate Addiction Services are here to help with free confidential one-to-one and group support. To find out more or to support Motivate through fundraising or donations, go to motivate.im. That's M-O-T-I-V and the number 8.im.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
When couples decide to part, there's a lot to deal with. There's the matter of the children, the matter of your property, the matter of pensions. You need to consider the matter of existing wills, and perhaps the matter of a business. And because you matter, Mann Benham Advocates are here for you when it comes to divorce and family matters. For help and advice and a free initial consultation, call Mann Benham on 639 350.
Mann Benham, here for you.
Want to give up smoking? October is Stoptober, the national campaign that encourages smokers to quit during the month. And if you can manage 28 days without tobacco, you're 5 times more likely to quit for good. But whenever you quit, remember, you're not alone. Help is available, and thousands of people like you have quit and now enjoy a healthier and wealthier life. To find out more, check out the latest Manx Health Matters podcast, now live via the Manx Radio website or your usual podcast provider. It really is a breath of fresh air.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Jed's with us as well today. Hi, Jed.
Hi, Andy. I'd like to talk about the Budget Process Committee, oral evidence session that was on the other day. And I'd urge everyone that's listening who cares about the Isle of Man and the future and how we budget and how our MHKs perform is look at the session. It's on YouTube, and it's fantastic that Tim Wald actually provide this facility. And it is a scrutineering session where June Watterson, David Ashford and Chris Thomas fronted Caldrick Rundle and an executive, Sarah Deoxall and Alex Allenson. And I'd urge everyone to spend, it's like nearly 2 hours in length, but if you really want an understanding of how the budgetary process ticks and how it works on the Isle of Man, I just say you've got to watch it. And it says everything about why we're in the position we are. It's not really fair to criticise your local MHK about the national issues and the national financing matters, because it's clear from the evidence that's been given in this session that they've got very little say in what happens.
And what do you think happens?
Well, the evidence that was presented shows that the budget, it comes along, and the parliamentarians who are voted in, they don't have really any great influence in how the money is divided. And in the last 2 years, I think we've had some dissenters. I think we had 6 last year and 8 the year before. But really, the financial planning process is virtually sprung on them with a day to go or so. And June Watterson has been a great proponent about this. I think if you listen to the budget debates over the last few years, he, who is a qualified accountant and has been in office for, 15 years, has finally challenged this process. And I think each year he's either voted against it or threatened to vote against it. But really, it's not up to me to cast, a pure opinion about it. I think everyone who's listening at the moment is just to take a look at that broadcast. And it is such an eye-opener. The fact that David Ashford says that MHKs feel intimidated when they're involved in sessions and meetings with the members of the Treasury. And when you look at other jurisdictions such as Jersey, and they have a huge lead-in time where they've got the financials in front of them, all tabulated and in full detail. And then I think it's a period of, say, a couple of months before they actually vote on the budget. And the budget, as we know, is a yes or no day, isn't it? You can't break it down in component parts. So it's that's it really, Andy. I would just, perhaps anyone who's out there who's got that interest, please take a look at this and you'll find it on YouTube.
What did you think happened before you saw this, Chad?
No, I knew. I've followed this for years, and I'll listen to the budget debate on the day where we get our MHKs, and they're floundering. They say, well, I'd like this to happen, I'd like that to happen, but reluctantly I would say yes. But when you drill down into the relationships between the backbench MHKs and their lack of influence on the departments, and we see this, with overspends, where, and so forth, it just makes it look a bit of a farce. And I think, any candidates next year or any MHKs now should be driving as hard as they can to change this process, because it's completely bonkers. And it could be that next year is just a write-off, because we've got the distraction of the election in September. And also, I'll throw one in, we've also got MoneyVal in September.
Yeah.
And the whole island's future could rest on the outcome of that. And you wonder how much of a distraction is that going to be, because there isn't going to be anything but fence sitting and tidying up until then. And you see it in the background now, what's happening. And I think, unfortunately, we do need some hard and fast action about how we're progressing.
So okay, just plug that video again then. Where is it available? What's it called again?
Yeah, you'll find it on the Timbald Parliament of the Isle of Man YouTube account. So it's easy to find. Just put that in the search box. And you'll find the role of the legislature. But as a bonus, you'll also be able to look at the session with the MUA, which was a few weeks ago, which is an absolute belter, where the executives of the MUA say they're not that keen on electric cars because they don't they're not really fit for the job, and other things. And I think, really, we have to start picking up on these sessions. At least, you can hear some of the facts. So it's quite refreshing to do that.
Okay, Jed, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Oh, thank you very much. Bye.
4 minutes to 1.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
And out of hours, the email address is maninline@manxradio.com. I was on the prom and observed the police booking everybody parked opposite on the war memorial. I asked why they waited for the show to start before they booked everyone. The policeman, this is Kingo, said, the policeman said an MHK was furious about people parking there. This is pathetic. People are trying to support the nighttime economy and gaiety. Let's encourage people to use the city. He says, are you supposed to, I mean, in law, I don't think you're actually supposed to park there. So it's fair to say that constabulary are doing their job if people are parked illegally. But we take the point where that's concerned. A note also, this is from Sally. Hello, Sally. What was that number again? If dodgy people turn up at your door offering to do building work, the Office of Fair Trading, it is 686500. 686500. If the people are very persistent, saying, you know, your chimney pot's going to fall off or the roof's about to cave in, you can always call the police on 631212. The absolute litmus test for this is just to say to anybody who turns up at your door cold calling to do building work, just say, can I have your business card, please? Can I have your phone number? They'll normally melt away into the background where that's concerned. That's it. Thanks to Howie on the phones today. Thank you for getting in touch. Man in Line returns tomorrow, Thursday at high noon. Enjoy the rest of your day.
WINT